Sue Waters from Challenger TAFE, and this is my interview with Sean O'Driscoll, General Manager for Community Support and Microsoft Most Valuable Professional. And in this interview, we talk about lots of things to do with managing online communities, and we also talk Web 2.
You're probably not aware of this, but my real job is I teach people how to farm fish, and when people meet me, they always go, wow, that's the most unusual
job. I was wondering what your real job was.
Yeah, so I teach people how to farm fish, and, like, people always are amazed by that. And, you know, probably from a woman's point of view, they're always wondering how I got into it. But when I look at what you do, I go, wow, how did you actually get to become this person that looks after online communities at Microsoft?
You know what's funny? Do you read Lee LaFever at Common Craft?
Dude.
So Lee, this is just a funny sort of anecdote for you. Lee's family heritage, his family started one of the first and largest koi farms in the U.S. In fact, his brother is credited with having named several of the most popular koi fish on the market today that were imported into the U.S. some years ago. It's a little fish farming connection.
Isn't that amazing? You'll have to tell Lee now.
I will.
So come on, tell me how you actually got into it, because I just think it's incredible, you know. I mean, it would be the dream
okay,
job
ready
for me.
Yeah,
I'm ready.
All right. You want me to dig into how did I get started into communities and Web 2.0 and what makes me interested in this stuff? Well, that sounds like a fun topic for me. I guess, you know, actually, I grew up on a farm myself. So if you're into fish farming, I'm into farming of all kinds. In fact, I grew up on a family farm here in the States. You know, and there's lots of farming experiences where you suddenly realize, hey, I'm going to college, right? Where you watch your father deliver a calf, you know, and it's not exactly romantic, but actually kind of disgusting. You kind of have these moments of going, yeah, I think college looks good. And so I have, quite a lot of background just in just agriculture, and that's sort of in my roots. In fact, my brother's going through the process of continuing that family farming tradition as part of the O'Driscoll clan, I guess, as it were. And I guess I'm one of those odd guys at Microsoft, maybe there's more of us than I think, that comes from a liberal arts background. My academic career actually generated a philosophy degree. And so I like to think, although it's probably not true, that I'm one of the few philosophy majors that has made a long-standing career at Microsoft. I've never written a line of code. I'm just about to complete my 15th year at Microsoft. And I guess now I have this new goal that I'd like to be 20 years at Microsoft having never written a line of code. But I guess as I've started blogging the last few months, I have had to write a little bit of HTML. But honestly, I have a policy on that if I can't cut and paste it from somewhere, I don't use it. So for me, it's all about the content. And about 4 years ago, I was running a services business for Microsoft, focused on independent software vendors and managing a group of consultants and actually accountable for a P&L or for revenue. And an individual I had known for a long time came to me and described to me this thing called the Most Valuable Professional Program, this MVP program, and how it was designed to reach out and thank and engage the world's elite contributors to technical communities focused on Microsoft software. And I thought that sounded pretty cool, and I was ready to do something different. And so I kind of jumped ship and dove headfirst into this job. And I remember my first MVP summit, showing up at this event, not really having a good feel for what this whole communities thing was all about, and walking into this gathering of, at the time, about 700 community enthusiasts who had come from all over the world to gather and talk about online communities and meet with their peers at Microsoft within the various product teams. And I remember being just totally overwhelmed by the passion that they brought for helping other people use our technology. And I think that was what stood out to me first, is this notion of pay it forward, of this genuine desire, altruistic, to help other people be successful, and that being sort of the underlying ethos of what makes communities so vital. I had spent so much of my career at Microsoft working with partners who had some sort of financial interest in recommending certain solutions or deploying solutions. And so I had this economic model really built in my brain, and I suddenly realized that wasn't at all what I was dealing with. Is I was really dealing with individuals who had very altruistic aims about helping other people learn and get more out of the technology they use, and that they very clearly weren't doing this to help Microsoft. They were doing it to help other users, which I thought was really cool. So that fascinated me on that level. The other thing that really opened my eyes at that particular event was seeing the diversity of the audience. And, lots of people talk about diversity in a business context, but what really struck me wasn't really the, you know, the traditional ways that people think about diversity of gender or race, but really thinking about global diversity and age and sociographic diversity, people from all walks of life, from students to retirees, people who made a living as IT pros and developers, but also, you know, the jewelry designer, the cardiologist whose hobby it was to help people online in the news groups, the tow truck driver, right? Lots of people from different walks of life and at all different economic state who all shared this common bond about helping people out in communities. And that was really cool as well, as I thought that was a great reflection of what Microsoft's real customer base looked like. And so I guess that was the other thing that really turned me on, and I haven't looked back since then in terms of being really invigorated and excited about the potential for how this notion of user-to-user conversations being so critical to how a company can evolve in servicing its global client base, in helping us build better products because we're doing a better and better job of listening to those enthusiasts and those users and the conversations that are occurring out in the communities, and that we're delivering a better experience because users are better able to find resources and expertise and knowledge from other users whom they inherently will always trust more than they will the manufacturer of the product. And so that part has just really kept me invigorated ever since and kind of led, I guess, ultimately to me launching this blog a few months ago at communitygrouptherapy.com to kind of talk about what are the business issues of bringing together this notion of user-to-user conversation within the context of trying to achieve business goals. And I follow the topic quite a lot, and one of the things I guess I find a lot of today is there's so much buzz about Web 2.0 and communities, but so much of what I read is very theoretic versus practical implementation. And I think one of the things that's been really exciting for me is having this opportunity to be part of true implementation and being able to take that theoretic knowledge and experience and really apply it and see where things broke and where things didn't break and what parts we were right about. So that part I think is really exciting.
So when you joined 4 years ago, did they have much of an online community then, or was that something you were responsible for helping build?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of lucky from that standpoint. There were some pretty big existing online communities, particularly around news groups. So, you know, looking back at that time, it was sort of before the big bow wave of blogging. It was pretty early even still for forums. But there were very large news groups infrastructure focused on Microsoft technology. So I had some legacy there that I got to inherit, and a lot of enthusiasts that we had already known who were the most active out in those news groups. But one of the first decisions that we made around the program was this decision that said, look, communities aren't really defined by the technology, in that case, news groups, right? Communities were defined by anywhere users want to gather to share knowledge and help other people. And so the program had to go through this change of saying, look, in the next 3, 5, 10 years, the way people communicate and share knowledge and expertise with one another is going to evolve. And so our program strategy needs to match that user experience. And so, you know, over the last few years, the program has continued to embrace the news groups, but has expanded to really get engaged in forums, online forums, lots of bloggers, even offline user group leaders, people who are still in certain markets around the world where you still don't have broadband prolifically everywhere. Local user groups continue to be an important part of the community. And so that's also part of our strategies to make sure we're thinking about offline as much as we do about online, even though it's harder to measure.
I mean, it looks to me like you spend a lot of time looking also at the trends and seeing what's happening with Web 2. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I really dug in. In fact, I did a post a few months ago. I mean, we were in the midst of employee evaluations, which we do a couple of times a year. And I guess what was going through my head at that time was, you know, are you really curious enough to be a leader in Web 2.0? And how much of your energy, if you're working on this stuff, are you really spending going out and looking at what's happening in the industry? And I think what happens in many corporations is you get so busy on incrementally improving what you've been doing that you can lose sight sometimes of really fundamental shifts that are going on in the marketplace. So I've spent a lot of time, and I don't claim to be an expert by any stretch of the imagination, because it's not my, you know, I'm not a consultant that makes my full-time living just researching these topics. But I do spend a lot of time talking to my peers and other companies doing community work, talking to consultants, attending conferences and events, and I try to read like crazy everything that I can. But it seems that there's a new social networking site every day, right? There's this weird gold rush where I kind of feel like every time I see a new one, you know, should I be rushing out there and getting my same online ID so that at least I have the same identity across all these social networks? And, I, you know, it's like a gold rush all over again. But I've kind of almost given up that. I finally decided that I can't run at all of them, and there's just some really key things that are really important to me, like bookmarking. Social bookmarking, I think, is a really core fundamental thing that has great business application as well as user-to-user application. That's something I think really interesting for us to pay attention to. I think one of the things I'm researching more right now that I'll post about soon is the whole area of rating and reputation systems. And so I've been thinking a lot about how we think about rating and reputation, both on individuals, and so thinking about the enthusiast, but also on the content, right? If I'm a user who's participating in community, especially as a lurker, one of the challenges I have is not just who in that community can I trust, but which pieces of content have been identified as great content. And if you think about that in a support experience standpoint, which is the problem space I deal in every day, it's particularly critical for us to work through.
But doesn't that, in a way, what DIG does?
Yeah, I mean, DIG is certainly one of the models we look at as a metaphor, right? Is how do you think about creating a reputation model around content and the authors of it? I think one of the challenges with DIG is it's a little heavy because somebody actually has to do the work of uploading the article into DIG and then creating the voting mechanism back to it. So, you know, it still requires some amount of effort that I'm a little bit concerned that the masses of end users may or may not be willing to take. And so, we wonder a little bit about more passive mechanisms based upon page views of generating some similar kinds of value. But, you know, all that said, I do like what DIG has done, and I love, in fact, I talk a lot about what Dell did with Dell IdeaStorm, which is kind of based on the DIG metaphor of creating a product feedback mechanism that says, hey, give us the suggestion, and then providing a promotion and demotion voting mechanism around that for these product ideas. And really, you know, I kind of describe that as American Idol for businesses, right? As you're letting the voting public then have a role in guiding your innovation. And you actually let the public then triage the good from the bad, which is kind of cool. It kind of allows us as the manufacturer to not be in the space where we're having to tell someone that their idea isn't very good, because nobody ever likes to hear their idea is not very good, but they learn what good ideas look like from other users' contributions and those that get votes. And those that don't get many votes, you know, you kind of learn what a good suggestion feels like and what a bad suggestion feels like. And I think that's quite a smart model that Dell has implemented and some others have done.
And that would be a very smart model for Microsoft.
Yeah, in fact, we are doing something similar through a site at connect.microsoft.com, where particularly users who are very interested in participating in betas can register for betas on connect.microsoft.com. And then it's essentially a public bug database where people can register bugs that they discover, and other users can then vote on those bugs. And then we can go back and close the loop when we ship the product and say, well, these are the suggestions that came through Connect that we fixed based upon your participation. And we can make sure that we're fixing the most highly rated things. And so that's, I think, sort of our entry into that space. And it's gone very, very well. I haven't been on Connect lately, but if you go out to Connect, you can get an idea for how many bugs were submitted there and how many users. And I mean, I guess there's probably close to a million unique participants now that have registered with Connect and have participated with us in product feedback through that mechanism.
And Microsoft is bringing out some great betas at the moment.
Yeah, there's a lot of, in the community space, there's some new things we're working on. There's a technology called Tag Space that our community team has put together, which is, you know, our foray a little bit into social bookmarking. There's a service called Rapport Services, which is all about reputation. And there's certainly forum technology that we're building largely for internal use to host our own forums off of MSDN and TechNet. So there's quite a lot going on around that point. But even our commercial products like SharePoint are beginning to add features that support technologies like Wiki and threaded discussions and blogging. So I think that's another area where certainly there's market opportunity around our commercial products that target sort of business 2.0 sorts of implementation.
I like LiveWriter at the moment.
Me too. I've been I blog on WordPress, but I use LiveWriter. I think one of the challenges, I think, with many of the free blogging platforms out there is that the editors are pretty weak from a usability standpoint, and I've been really happy with LiveWriter.
I was absolutely blown away by how impressive it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, if you're used to, again, it's sort of what I like about some of the technology change that we see happening around us outside the company and with things like Live Writer. And even MSN Spaces, I think, is a reasonable example as well, is that, you know, part of the challenge with the participative web or Web 2.0 the last several years is, you know, while there are lots of bloggers and lots of contributions, there was still some level of technical knowledge required to really truly be a part of that change. And over the last couple of years especially, we've started to really see that change, and that the, you know, some of these technologies, Live Writer and Spaces and MySpace and YouTube and others, have really democratized the ease of use to the masses who don't need to have technical skills and can now really contribute in very even ways to these online discussions and content models. And I think that's super exciting, right? It's a way for much more people to participate.
So products like that, do you think Microsoft will supply for free? Like, they'll have those sort of products for free?
Yeah, I don't know what the overall sort of pricing and licensing model may evolve to look like. I know Live Writer today is a free download, and it wouldn't surprise me if that were to continue. You know, I use the product, you know, just as anyone else, so I'm not really connected to the product team to know what their longer term pricing or licensing model might look like. But that's a space where I would tend to think that, you know, that's all about creating a model where content becomes the commodity. You know, and while I wouldn't want to speculate on what the acquisition of a Quantiv means last week, you know, clearly we're making a big statement about our interest in advertising and some different sorts of revenue models. So I think that might give us some clues as to what some of those future licensing models might feel like.
And if we go back to the community online groups, I noticed you've talked about one particular participant, which is the Flame Warrior, how you believe
yes.
that. Can you talk about how you believe that should be handled and who they are and how they should be handled?
Well, that's a great topic. I mean, it's in fact, the 20 minutes or so before we started talking, I was posting in our private – we have a private community as well where all of our enthusiasts have special privileges to access and discuss things. And I was actually putting a post out there talking about this exact issue and how we want to think about dealing with trolls or flamers or whatever the semantic of the day is that people want to discuss.
And so in your terms, a troll and a flame warrior is the same?
Yeah, they're pretty similar. I mean, I don't know. I guess you could maybe distinguish between the two a little bit. But, you know, in the end, they tend to be people who are there to create a reaction and often disrupt the conversation versus adding value to the conversation. And, you know, they're a blight, I think, on the health of many of these communities. And, you know, there's different companies have different policies. You know, some companies are pretty heavy in their communities about moderation, and they use moderation as a way to trim or block access to their forums or delete posts. Today, we have a very laissez-faire approach to this, right? We don't really heavily moderate any of our communities. We do, you know, eliminate spam and offensive, you know, blatantly offensive material, as we should. But, you know, if somebody wants to get out into the communities and you know, our communities and say critical things about Microsoft or about our products, that's all fair game, right? Is I think, you know, saying negative things about us is part of what makes those communities actually relatively credible for the participants. But it's, you know, those who are actually engaging in very disruptive ways of diluting the value of conversations or taking conversations in a completely different way, or, you know, or somebody, you know, you might even find a post where somebody's asking some question about Vista and suddenly the replier is off talking about the war in Iraq. And does you know, is that offensive material? Maybe to some. I don't know. I'm not sure I want to be the material police around that, but it certainly is disruptive to the flow. And I guess my wish for everyone would be, if you see those troll-like behaviors, the best way to deal with them is to ignore them, right? Is any sort of response to a person that is trying to disrupt a conversation is giving them exactly what they want. And while it is so hard to resist hitting the send button sometimes, those are the threads that you should probably put in your outbox and delete before you actually hit send.
From a company's point of view, when you've got somebody doing this and you're not, as you said, you're not deleting those posts and you're not moderating it, people do respond back to them and it seems to all take off. How do you stop that destroying your forum?
In the forums, we have a bit more control. So in the forum space, because we do have authentication, we don't tend to have the problems all that frequently. And in fact, you know, I actually asked the question of one of my peers who runs the or administers the developer forums of how many times have we banned a user, and it's almost never have we had to ban a user. And there's something that funny that kind of happens, right? When somebody has to authenticate into your site via, you know, some live ID or some sort of standard authentication, that in and of itself is a barrier that often guides behavior. So, you know, I think it's important to, you know, in those kinds of environments that you do have people authenticate in, because it does make them feel more accountable. And once you have their ID, it becomes much easier administratively to ban them if you decide you have to take that action. But I also think it's really important that you establish ground rules and that you've published some guidelines about, hey, these are the kinds of behaviors we think are acceptable behaviors in this community, and these are the behaviors we don't think are acceptable. And I think as a company, one of the things that you can actually do is have some fun with that, right? Is you don't have to be stoic and cold and corporate voice in that. But you can have some fun. If you go to Channel 9, which is one of our larger developer communities, you know, I love that one of the rules on Channel 9 is don't be a jerk. Right? You know, is there a clear definition of what don't be a jerk is? Not really. But I think we all kind of get the idea, right, that there are certain behaviors that aren't appreciated here and that you should go somewhere else. And when you do that well, you find that your communities start to self-police in pretty healthy ways. Where we tend to have more problems is in the news groups where there's no authentication and, you know, the best you could do is ban anonymity of news groups has made that the issue, and I think, more severe in those places. And it's very hard to kind of have those same ground rules have the same kind of teeth. And so that's one of the issues we're wrestling with now is how do we want to deal with that in a purely public model where there's no authentication versus our forums, which we feel like are in pretty good shape. Yeah, one of the things that I think is critical to healthy communities is that newbies post for the first time. Right? There's lots of people that circle the community pool, and they take advantage of the content and conversations that are there, but they're hesitant to participate. And it's critical for us as community leaders to lower that barrier to first-time participation. And the presence of trolls, I think, dramatically increases the barrier to participation for a newbie. And I do think it's a great thing for, you know, anyone who's listening to this podcast and they're thinking about community development or they have this issue in their communities today. You know, it's not a matter of if you're going to have trolls in your community. I think every community faces this crisis at some point of how to manage disruption. And one of your processes in planning for a successful community needs to be proactively thinking about what are the rules and behaviors and norms that you expect in your community, and how are you as a community leader going to enforce and manage those norms, and ensuring that you do so in very consistent ways.
You've obviously done a good job with your external ones, that it hasn't been an issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's... You know, I can't say it's never an issue because we have such volume in our external communities that, you know, it probably happens and some of them we just never see. Right? But we have probably in the neighborhood of in excess of 500 million page views across all of our properties a year. So it's, you know, the volumes we're dealing with are pretty extreme. But, you know, you're right. I think there's something useful about getting a critical mass. And once you're a critical mass, the community tends to start to self-regulate pretty well, just like any ecosystem would. Hey, there's the philosophy thing coming back in.
It is. But I mean, from my point of view, community is just so important.
Yeah, I think it's fundamental. I mean, I think I've said probably a million times by now in various venues that I think any website that doesn't offer user-to-user conversation is missing the point today, right? I pretty much know what every company's web page says on any topic before I ever go there, right? If I was going to buy a camera today, you know, what value am I really going to get from going to Nikon or Olympus's website if it's just a Web 1.0 experience that is their standard material, right? Because they're all going to say it's easy to use and it's flexible and it has these features and, you know, it's all going to say very expected things. What's unexpected and needed by me is the authentic voice of other users who are similar to me in skill and interest on that topic and what they're saying is good or bad. And that's why, you know, that's why you and I probably go to Amazon or CNET or other places and we read user reviews. And that dramatically colors and informs what we buy and what we consume. Right? And there's nothing new about that. We always trusted our friends more than our manufacturers. But Web 2.0 has opened us up to experts on literally every topic versus our friends or our physical networks of people that we know are usually much more limited in their skills and expertise in different areas. Now I could find an expert on any topic I wanted. And more so today, I have ways to validate whether or not I think that their feedback is good, right? Whether the suggestions are useful.
I mean, from my point of view, because obviously I'm not from the business side, but just the expanding of your network is just incredible.
I've been astounded how many people I've met like you.
The fish farmer.
You know, a fish farmer. In the last 90 days, you know, just getting connected and meeting new people. And you know, it's just, it is a new work style, right? And this is another issue I guess I've blogged some about, but this notion of an evolving work style that is participative by design and participative by DNA is an important evolution for the business world as well as for the social world, is that, you know, the MySpace generation or Generation Next or Generation Y or whatever name you want to put to this a generation of graduates coming into the workforce today, all of them are coming into the workforce at a time where online conversation was a default and they're Twittering. And, you know, that's just the way they live. And email to them is actually arcane. Is not their preferred work style. And so it'll be very interesting, I think, to see the implication of that generation on the workforce and how that sort of transparency impacts how organizations build things, how they support products, how they drive innovation.
It's just incredible how much it is changing.
I fear that I'm already too old, right? I mean, I was giving a talk a few weeks ago
I've seen how old you are and you're young.
Yeah, I know, but I did have this moment where I was at this event and I said, look, I'm 37 years old and I think I'm already too old. And the topic, I was talking a little bit about Twitter at the moment, and there was this funny response there was a girl in the audience who worked for Adobe, and she raised her hand as I was commenting about Twitter, and she made this sort of off-the-cuff comment that says, well, Sean, you have to have, you know, it's great if you have a lot of friends, and she's making this kind of random comment. And I had to look back at her, and I said, well, thanks. Are you saying I don't have any friends? And that was sort of that was almost a validating moment. That, yeah, I probably am too old.
I don't see that because I work with young students all the time. My students range in age from 16 up to my age, and I know far more about all this technology and how to use it. And I use it.
That's great.
I probably use it way more than they do.
It's very encouraging for me. You know, and I do think, I guess I do aspire that is part of my role, is to bridge the two worlds of having enough knowledge and understanding of what's useful and important about this emergent mass collaboration environment with the business that we're trying to do today, whether it's business to consumer or business to business. Environments and how you kind of get the best of both worlds going. And so I guess hopefully I can aspire to be part of that glue in the middle and keep myself nice and relevant through that change.
Well, I think the key is certainly the blogs sort of help, because I find you hear the noise. So when they all start saying the same thing, you know it's something you got to look.
Yeah, it's amazing. Part of the reason I started blogging a few months ago was it was very much a research exercise in the beginning of okay, I have all these enthusiasts who are also bloggers, but I'm not blogging, and it's not because I want to do it and have the me too, but I kind of want to see what the lifestyle of a blogger feels like and what are the tools that bloggers use, and what does that experience really feel like? And that for exactly that same reason, it's been an interesting learning curve about things that work and things that don't work, what strikes a chord with people, what doesn't, what the heck is technorati and what's an authority and does it matter? And you know, and then I find that I get kind of competitive about some of that stuff, and then I wonder why, and that doesn't matter. And but it is fun.
But your blog's got quite good statistics to it.
I hope so. I don't know what good is. You know, I get about 5,000 page views a month right now in the first 3 months.
Exactly. Good statistics.
I guess it's good. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what. It's not like I walked into it with a goal in mind, other than more personal of, you know, would it advance my ability to understand what is interesting and important about this trend of user-generated content. Mm. And I think with that as my goal, I've learned more in the last 90 days since I started blogging than I learned in the 2 to 3 years prior to that cumulative. And so from that standpoint, it's been super powerful. And I guess any metrics that come from that are icing on the cake.
And also, probably people now know you on a much more personal level.
That's definitely true. I mean, that part really does scratch a different itch for me, you know, personally. I'm a relator. That's kind of who I am in my DNA. And you know, I like to make things personal. I got criticism once from an enthusiast, a community member, and I don't even remember what the issue was, but I reacted really sharply to something that was going on, and I got this feedback from them that said, well, Sean, you shouldn't take it personally. It's just business and feedback and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, it is personal because I care. Yeah. I'm not taking it personal, you know, that I'm going to go home and cry about this and everything, but I am going to take it passionately because I do care. And I do like the fact that this blog puts a voice to me as an employee at Microsoft that is completely different than any other way that the world might find out about me as an employee at Microsoft, right? It's seeing things that I'm quoted saying in traditional PR or interviews I might do for Information Week or somebody else isn't really introduce someone to who I am and what I'm about. But reading my blog is better than any resume I'll ever write in the future in terms of really knowing who I am and how I think about things.
Definitely. What amazes me is, in some ways, you're very similar to me in that, like, you've been around this technology for a long time, and yet it's only been in the last 90 days that you've actually got into a blog on the outside world.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I was the same. I'd been introduced to – I had a blog way back at the beginning of last year, and I just couldn't get engaged by it.
Yeah, I started the funny thing is I started a little blog on MSN Spaces for my family a couple of years ago, and in a weird way, I couldn't keep up with that. It sort of quickly tired out for me because I just felt like a colder and impersonal way to communicate with a pretty small group of people that there are lots of other methods for me to communicate with. Whereas this is this just seems to work better for me for whatever reason. I guess it scales better, and because it's also my job to think about communities, I do find that writing is pretty therapeutic, and committing your thoughts to writing is a way to clarify your ideas and test your ideas and kind of give yourself a way to articulate them in pretty consistent ways. And I guess, you know, I know, at least I hope a lot of the people in my organization, I hope, also read it and get insight from me as a leader and a manager that perhaps they didn't get before either, which I think would be another great byproduct that I hope is true.
I'm sure they will be. I do feel you've been very lucky with how your blog's going, but I feel a strong sense of frustration because my podcast site is far outperforms.
Oh, your blog?
Yeah, my podcast site is huge, and blog's very slow. It takes a long time often for people to become engaged by your blogging.
That's interesting. I don't know why that is. I'm not, honestly, despite what I'm doing right now, I'm not a big listener to podcasts.
I know.
Myself.
And, you know, it's actually amazing that with this whole online community situation, you now have preferred methods that people have. So you'll have people that prefer to listen to a podcast, and they won't.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and they won't go near a blog, and then you've got the bloggers who won't go near a podcast, and then you've got the people that like wikis that won't go near either. So I find it quite amazing that I'm having to cater to three different audiences.
Yeah, no, I think that's very true. I've sort of wondered, right, is when will I break down and host some podcasts on my blog, and it's not currently in my plan because I just don't have any more time to kind of think about it. And I, you know, there's a certain level of you know, I still have this full-time job that I care a lot about, and my blog isn't really part of my job, and I don't want to, it can't take too much time, or I'm kind of taken away from, perhaps I'm taken away from other things I need to be doing. And so I kind of, that's a conflict I have to kind of work through in my own head. But I enjoy doing them, so I'm glad when anyone expresses an interest in chatting with me, because I, you know, as you've probably already discovered, I'm very shy and not very talkative.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, you should be thanking Lee, because it was through Lee's blog site that I found your blog site, so.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, he's a local Seattleite as well, so he and I catch up from time to time. In fact, if you've read any of my barbecuing comments on my blog, he'll be at my house for barbecue on Saturday. So.
I read your barbecue comments. As you know, I'm astounded by the fact that Americans have huge barbecues, when that really is something that the Aussies own, is the right to the barbecue.
Oh, I'd put my barbecue up against any Aussie, so you can throw that out to the audience that listens to this. If a lot of them will probably be fellow Aussies, and I'm proud of my barbecuing equipment and my skills, and they're welcome to see photos in my Flickr account off my blog of that outdoor kitchen.
I don't think I've met any of my friends who's come near yours. I think I know one person whose barbecue setup comes close to yours.
That's great. I guess what I'd really want people to know is it's not just a picture. I use that thing a lot.
Oh, you can tell. You can tell.
Good.
Especially when you look at your Delicious account.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. If anyone wants to tag draft me on barbecuing, it's out there.
It's actually, I love the program that could actually put visual images of what somebody's doing with their Delicious account, because it actually tells you a lot about what they're really interested in, which is the post I did about it before. And I said, well, I never realized this about Sean, that he was into barbecuing so much.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea, some sort of, even a gadget that you could, that you know, would provide visualization data on people's tagging behavior, I think would be a cool
thing. Well, there is one. I did blog about it. It was pretty cool. I learned a lot about different people, like the guy from over east who he's a podcaster, and when I put his through, I suddenly realised that he's really into motorbikes and rides motorbikes, and then this other guy that I network with, he's, you know, big in e-learning, but I didn't realise that one of his key focus is m-learning, which is, you know, my area. So you actually learn a
lot. That's cool.
Yeah, I'll send you the link to the site, which it tells you a lot about what a person's interested in.
Well, and I really like this idea as a support guy at Microsoft, right? When I think about our business strategy, this notion of tag drafting is, I think, super powerful, because if I'm, you know, one of our challenges is, and many companies are like this, where we have a kind of a product-centric help and support experience, but our users don't really have a product-centric view on life, right? They have a scenario-centric. They want to manage their digital memories, or they want to do home networking, or other sorts of things. And so I think if we could create a model where our users could, quote-unquote, subscribe to tag draft behind our enthusiast experts who are out there tagging all the world's best content about home networking or exchange deployment or whatever the topic was, then we create a whole different way to create efficiency for people out on the web. And I think that's a cool thing for us to think about from a help and support standpoint.
So would that mean that in your forums that you'd have tagging when somebody posts an article?
Yeah, and that's one of the things we're working on for the year ahead is implementing a tagging model within our forums and across our properties.
I think tagging is the most, as you said, it's the most important thing. And you can tell the guys that, can they have tagging on my home computer as well?
Yeah, for like sort of the Delicious model where you install an applet sort of model.
Something, because you know how you save things in all these different files, and then you can't,
yeah.
And you can't remember where you put the little bugger.
Oh, on your personal desktop.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good thought. I don't know the answer to that, actually.
But wouldn't that be so cool?
Yeah, it would be cool.
So that when you save a file, you've got tags attached to every file.
I'll have to ask the guys working on Windows.
You'll have to tell them it's a good idea.
Yep.
Definitely.
I bet they're thinking about it, but I'll certainly throw it at them.
You know what? They mightn't be thinking about it.
I'll be surprised if it's not on their roadmap, but I will, now that you've said it, I'll definitely follow up and make sure.
Just simple things like, you know, if you could, when you save things on your computer, that you could have tags, whether it was photos or files or whatever, and be able to sort things on your computer so then you're easily able to find them.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and I think it's important that it's, you know, a true folksonomy, right? Is I think one of the things that companies will debate is the sort of the notion of system tags versus truly enabling a folksonomy, right? Is do I as the company want to dictate? I'm choosing the harsh word intentionally, I guess, probably showing my bias ahead of time, but do I want to dictate what the tagging terms are for use on my property, or do I truly want to support a folksonomy like Delicious does, where the user selects the language they want to associate with certain tags? And you know, as a traditional Web 1.0 sort of person, you might think, you know, giving up that control is a really hard choice to make, and it will be painful in the short term until you get to critical mass. But actually, understanding how your users want to create categories, I think, is really important to how you think about your site design. Mm. Even if you're harvesting those tags from people's search queries. So, you know, in our case, do we start to create tags around the search terms people use on our support site, for example, and allow that to be one of the mechanisms to create categorization?
Yeah, we could make it powerful.
Lots to do. I have job security for a while.
I think you do. Especially if you can keep an eye on all the trends that are happening with Web 2.
I think that's a fool's game. I don't think I can possibly keep up, but I'll chase it as hard as I can, and we can all tag draft off each other and find out what each other are doing.
I think we're just going to get overwhelmed by the knowledge gain.
Yeah.
And need a holiday.
That's right. Oh, I'm all for that.
Thanks for spending the time with me today, Sean.
Absolutely, my pleasure. It's glad to have a global chat.
I'm sure you've had global chats before.
I know, but it's always fun to kind of reach around the world, and I think that's the, you know, one of the fun things about communities and this online virtual world is time and space are kind of meaningless, and it's good to get reminded of that through things like this. So I appreciate you taking the time and having the interest and reading my silly blog.